and more at Zoom.us.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lurie. Well, coming up, why did the Democratic Party lose so many races last year? From governor's races to the U.S. Senate to the House to the presidency, the Democrats were trounced. This morning in Washington, D.C., Action for a Progressive Future and the Progressive Democrats of America are issuing an autopsy of where they think the party has gone wrong. We're going to talk about that autopsy on the Democratic Party and the future of the party with Richard Eskow. Eskow is a senior advisor for health and economic justice for Social Security Works. He's the host of the Zero Hour on Free Speech TV, and he recently wrote the piece, Why Centrists Will Sink the Democrats If They Haven't Already, for ourfuture.org. And he joins us on the phone. Richard Eskow, welcome to WMNF. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Rob. Good to be here.
So what's your take, just initially, before we delve into the autopsy, why do you think the Democrats lost so badly last year?
Well, I think there are many factors, but I think you have to look at not just the presidential race, as a lot of people are inclined to do. I think that the Russians may or may not have been a factor in the presidential race. I'm sure they were some kind of factor. We're trying to find out now. But here's what we know has been a factor at every level. Turnout is way down, especially among Democratic base voters, black and brown voters, young people, other people that typically could be counted on to support the Democrats. It's not that they're necessarily switching to the Republican Party. Very few of them are, but they're just not showing up. We know that's happening, and that's happening for a couple reasons. One, it's happening because Republicans at the state level are really assaulting democracy. They're really trying to disenfranchise large groups of voters based on their race, based on other kinds of identity, based on their propensity to vote Democratic. And people are also not turning out to vote for the Democrats because polling and other feedback, focus groups and so on, is showing us that people don't really believe anymore that the Democratic Party understands their day-to-day lived experience or their struggles, and they don't believe that the Democratic Party has a clear agenda for doing something about it. You throw on top of all of that the wild card of Donald Trump actually appropriating some of the messaging of the left that appealed to some working class white voters and confused and discouraged other voters, and you have a recipe for failure up and down the line.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking of those coal miners in Pennsylvania and Ohio and parts of West Virginia. The president saying that he's going to turn the Republican Party into the party of working people, and that effort being cheered on by people like Steve Bannon, that I think there is an identity crisis in the Democratic Party. It used to be the Democrats that was the party of working people.
Yeah, and of course, I think we probably all agree that Trump's Republican Party is no more going to represent working people than Trump steaks were the best steaks ever. But it's salesmanship. But the point is this: the Democrats left a vacuum. The Democrats, somewhere along the line in the 1990s, most conspicuously, decided to reach out to Wall Street, to people who are wealthy economically but socially pretty liberal and tolerant, and that was going to be their financial base and therefore a big driver of their policies. Now, they're trying to back away from that, but they don't seem to really know how to do that, and they don't seem to be deeply committed to it, and people no longer feel, working people, I think white and African-American and other people of color, I think working people no longer feel they have a solid friend in the Democratic Party the way they did when, for example, Franklin D. Roosevelt died, and there was mourning MOU mourning across the country for his passing among working people. You don't have that feeling about the Democratic Party anymore.
Let me read from the autopsy that's being unveiled this morning. This is one of the bullet points. It says the Democratic Party's claims for fighting for working families have been undermined by its refusal to directly challenge corporate power, enabling Trump to masquerade as a champion of the people. The autopsy report goes on to say Democrats will not win if they continue to bring a wonk knife to a populist gunfight, nor can Democratic leaders and operatives be seen as real allies of the working class if they're afraid to alienate big funders or to harm future job or consulting prospects.
No, I think that's exactly right. I think that what has happened to the Democratic Party is that in order to try to thread this needle of appealing to large funders, not alienating those funders, but at the same time wanting to offer something to working people, they've gotten into this convoluted process of both language and proposals where they'll talk about the opportunity economy, which used to be Republican talk, or they'll talk about having skin in the game and shared responsibility and all these people don't know what they're talking about, and they'll come up with ideas that are overly complex because when Bernie Sanders, and I should say I was the writer for the Bernie Sanders campaign, so I'm not neutral, but when Bernie Sanders proposed tuition-free public college, the response was, well, yes and no, it should be up to a certain level, or Andrew Cuomo says for some people but not others, you got to stay in New York for 4 years, and it becomes complicated and tortured as opposed to just saying, look, this is something everybody should have, you deserve it the way you deserve free high school, you deserve health care the way you deserve to be free of attack from enemies foreign and domestic. Those are messages people understand. You get into this sort of hair-splitting, nuancy, wonky stuff. First of all, it's not effective policy, and secondly, it's not effective politics.
In some ways, Donald Trump didn't hair split. I mean, he offered big ideas, big solutions. Whether or not he can get them, I think, is still in doubt. But he offered everything to people. He's gonna end NAFTA. He's gonna build the wall. He makes all these promises to people in a big way, in a very kind of self-assured way. Is that what the Democrats should do? Should they offer big promises?
Well, I think they should, but they should mean them. You know, I think this is the perfect time to say Trump lied to you. Ironically, Hillary Clinton was right. Some Trump voters you'll never get. They're deplorable. Others you will. But really, the appeal to a big ideas is not just to Trump voters. It's to all working people. It's to the working single mom who didn't spend the 4 hours or 5 hours it was going to take her to get across town and vote, wait online to vote, and then get back to her job, costing her much-needed income because she's on an hourly wage. It's going to appeal to her, too. She's going to say, yeah, that's a reason to get out and vote despite all the obstacles they've put in our way. And by big ideas, not just, oh, I'll get your jobs back and it'll be beautiful, which was Trump's pitch, but yes, this is how I'll get your job back. This is exactly what we'll do about infrastructure. You know, Trump promised to rebuild the country's infrastructure. Now he says, well, I'm thinking of a public-private deal, which is exactly what Democrats have been saying for 30 years. No, let's tax millionaires and billionaires. Let's stop obsessing about federal deficits when we have so many people un- and underemployed, when we have a threat to our lives from crumbling infrastructure. Let's spend $1 trillion. Let's spend it now. Let's do it, put people to work, and make this a better physical country to live in. That's the kind of big idea Democrats should be talking about. Concrete, real, but tangible, and they can say, not like the nonsense that Trump is selling you, but real, here's how it works.
We're talking with Richard Eskow. He's a senior advisor for health and economic justice for Social Security Works, and he's the host of the Zero Hour on Free Speech TV. He writes for OurFuture.org, and he's written for Common Dreams and the Huffington Post. We're talking about the autopsy on why the Democratic Party lost. The autopsy is being unveiled this morning in Washington, D.C., by several groups, including the Progressive Democrats of America. Richard, one of the recommendations is that, and I'll read it, because the superdelegate system by its very nature undermines the vital precept of one person, one vote, the power, the voting power of all superdelegates to the Democratic National Convention must end. What do you think of that?
I think it's absolutely right. I think, you know, I hate to use words like branding, but when you're, the name of your party is Democratic, and you don't have Democratic processes for picking your candidates, I think you've got a branding problem, but more fundamentally, you've got a governance problem and you've got a voter problem, because people see this, they get it. You know, voters now have more information than they've ever had at any time in the past. They see it, they get that it's wrong. The very voters you want to get are the voters, or the Democrats should be wanting to get, are turned off by this process because they know it's not representative. And when corporate lobbyists continue to get appointed to positions of influence, voters are understandably going to be turned off, and that's what we're seeing now.
One of the recommendations is the party, and you've talked about this before, the party should avidly promote inspiring programs such as single-payer Medicare for all, free public college tuition, economic security, infrastructure, and green jobs initiatives, and tackling the climate crisis. Let me ask you, do you think that that's too progressive? You think the majority of the country would not go for all of those?
No, I think they would go for all of those. I think that, let's just take one of them, Medicare for all or single payer. If you look at the polling, if you look at the way it's tracked over the last few years, it's consistently had a base of support, not a majority, but a base of support, despite the fact that neither party was pushing for it. No major politicians until Bernie came along were advocating for it. It still had a base of support. Once Bernie came along, once other 16 Democrats now have signed on to Bernie's Medicare for All bill, we're seeing approval ratings for the concept go up. We now have majorities of voters, according to some polls, approving some kind of single-payer or government health care for all. And that's with the discussion barely begun. I think if you go out to Heartland America and you say, hey, our health care system stinks, between the bills and the co-pays, even if you look, a study, in an actuarial study, shows that a family of four with quote-unquote good health insurance in the United States pays more than $11,000 a year in out-of-pocket costs when you add everything up, deductions from paychecks and everything else. So people know our current health care system stinks, and that's something that can appeal to all voters if it's presented the right way.
I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about an article that you wrote recently called Dems Want to Ditch Leaders and Move Left, and you say they're right, and you talk about a new poll, the Harvard-Harris poll. Before we go to the Harvard-Harris poll, though, I want to ask you about something you say right at the beginning. You say, if the party establishment thinks Robert Mueller's investigation will save it, it's probably wrong. And you say, look what happened after Watergate. What happened after Watergate?
Well, you had Richard Nixon driven from office after widely documented high crimes and misdemeanors. He was a crook, a flat-out crook. Everybody knew it. Before that, you had Spiro Agnew, his vice president, driven from office for corruption and crooked actions, crimes. And yet, 2 years later, Jimmy Carter, when he got the Democratic nomination, way ahead in the polls, but almost lost. It was a squeaker only 2 years after Nixon resigned in disgrace. And 4 years, and by the way, Jimmy Carter, I love him as an ex-president, but he ran and governed as a centrist Democrat, just like they're trying to do today. Jimmy Carter lost in 1980, Ronald Reagan won, and ushered in 12 years of a Republican presidency. So if the Democrats think, and many of them do, that Trump's troubles are going to save them because people hate Trump so much that they'll show up in droves in 2018 and 2020 to vote Democratic. I think that's a very flawed assumption because history tells us that's not how it works.
All right. So this Harvard-Harris poll that you talk about is very interesting. What do you think are the significant findings of the Harvard-Harris poll that you write about?
Well, number one is that a majority of Democratic base voters, according to this poll, support movements inside the Democratic Party, and I'm quoting from it, to take it even further to the left and oppose the current Democratic leaders. A majority of Democrats said that they support those movements, meaning they want the Democratic Party to move to the left. They want the current leaders out. That's a huge statement. And by the way, we're not talking about Bernie bros here. Female voters, 55% support that idea, as opposed to men, 49%. Hispanic voters, 65%. African American voters, 55%, versus whites, 46%. So this is a movement of women and of people of color to move the party left, get rid of the current leadership. And the name of the game now in elections, as the autopsy correctly points out, the name of the game is not persuading some imaginary, persuadable voter who's halfway between a Republican and a Democrat, because those creatures don't really exist anymore. The name of the game is getting your base to turn out, and the way you do that is by giving them what they support, a more left party and new leaders.
Well, to your point, let me just play something New York Senator Chuck Schumer said during the Democratic convention last year, when there was a lot of optimism among Democrats that they were going to sweep the elections, pick up U.S. Senate seats, and pick up the presidency. Let's listen back to what Charles Schumer said. This is last summer, just at the end of the Democratic convention. This was his prediction about what's going to happen in the race.
Now, you could end up with a situation where Pennsylvania, Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Wisconsin, and Missouri all have two Democratic senators.
But does Trump, the way Trump is campaigning, does he play into those that sentiment, that fear, here in, not in Philadelphia or its suburbs, but okay, out in Johnstown?
Here are two points on that. First, the number of blue-collar, high school-educated voters we will lose is smaller than people think, because the people who go for Trump's appeal, particularly immigration and, you know, the them versus us, they're already Republicans. Here's an interesting fact. High school-educated males, Democrats are pro-immigration reform, Republicans are anti-immigration reform. Both high school educated in the same places. So in other words, the kind of appeal that Trump has brought out above the table, Republicans have always been using below the table, and it's already won a large percentage of those people over. On the other hand, Trump is so new that for every, this is the second point, for every blue-collar Democrat we will lose in Western PA, we will pick up two, three moderate Republicans in the suburbs of Philadelphia. And you can repeat that in Ohio and Illinois and Wisconsin. The voters who are most out there figuring out what to do are not the blue-collar Democrats. They are the college-educated Republicans who lean Republican or are independent and in the suburbs.
That was Senator Chuck Schumer last summer at the Democratic convention, really optimistically predicting that he's going to pick up U.S. Senate seats and pick up the presidency, not with the help of working class people, but with the help of moderate Republicans. So Richard, I'm sure you've heard that soundbite before. What do you make of what he said back in August of last year?
Well, how'd that work out for him? Look, obviously he was spectacularly wrong. A lot of us knew it at the time. The notion that, as Harry Truman didn't exactly say, but he's been quoted as saying, in a race between a Republican and a Republican, the Republican wins every time. You got to stand for something. Voters want to know that you actually have values, even if they don't agree. This is why Bernie had support in places people didn't expect. Not that, I'm not saying he was perfect either, but But, you know, voters have to believe there's a core person there with genuine values and a core party with genuine values. There was no way Republican voters voted for Donald Trump at levels that were, you know, pretty much equivalent with the way they always vote. So the notion that Donald Trump was uniquely abhorrent or something was absolutely wrong. The notion that you were going to get a moderate, they do this every year. They say, well, we'll get moderate Republicans, and that's how, you know, there aren't that many moderate Republicans. There aren't that many Republicans that are going to cross over. We live in a polarized time. A lot of people here in D.C., you know, yearn for the days of bipartisan consensus. I don't. A lot of people do. But like it or not, those days are gone. You've got to work in the world we live in. And that was doomed to failure.
We're talking with Richard Eskow. We're talking about the autopsy on the Democratic Party that's being released today by a group of progressives in Washington, D.C. It's going to be revealed today. It was talked a little bit about on the last show here on WMNF from a woman's point of view. Rich, I want to ask you about young people in terms of whether or not they want the Democratic Party to move left. The young people are the future. Where do they stand on this question?
69% of voters, almost 70%, 7 out of 10, aged 18 to 34, said they support these movements to push the party left and oppose the current leadership. And bear in mind, that's just talking about the young voters who vote Democratic. It's not really, you know, there's a whole other cohort out there. So, you know, it's clear that the future of the Democratic Party is left, and it is not with the leadership they currently have. And the fact that they're trying to tweak or fine-tune the kinds of leaders they have now, the fact that they're appointing corporate lobbyists to DNC positions and what have you, this is not going to work when it comes to young people. And if they get turned off of the Democratic Party, they could be turned off it for 20, 30 years. So, you know, it's really, really a very reckless thing that they're doing not to listen to these young voters. And one last comment. You know, for a decade, I've been listening privately to Democratic members of Congress and so on, clucking at millennials for not voting for them and not turning out in off-year elections. But what they're not thinking about is the fact that they're not giving them a reason to vote, and that's what they need to do.
The final area I want to ask you about is identity politics, and there is a big debate. Steve Bannon brought it up a few weeks ago, whether or not the Democratic Party should lean more towards the groups that include African Americans, Hispanics, the GLBT community, and others, and use that as, you know, as its main group of focus, or whether it should move toward the working class. And Steve Bannon says if you have a debate versus identity politics versus working class, the Republicans are going to win that debate every time if the Republicans assume that they have captured the working class. Is it as simple as that? Is that the way that you would break down you know, what the challenge is for the Democratic Party?
I think the very notion that there is a split between working class politics and identity politics is an invention of corporate Democrats. I don't think there's a quote-unquote identity politics leader in American history who would argue that you can ignore economic issues. Margaret Sanger, the pioneering feminist, was a member of the Socialist Party. Martin Luther King, Dr. King described himself as a democratic socialist. Malcolm X, economic independence. We could go on and on, but the point is this. Identity politics, as it's being framed by establishment Democrats, is the next corporate lobbyist we appoint to the DNC will be a woman or a person of color. That's not real. Real identity politics is recognizing structural racism and structural bigotry, economic racism and economic bigotry, as well as the forms of social bigotry that people confront every day in their lives, and as well as confronting the kind of racism that gets our beautiful black children shot down in the street. We need to confront all of it, but the notion that it's one versus the other, if they do it, Bannon's right. If they try to play one off the other, that's an advantage to the Republicans. If they recognize that it's one struggle and that we're all in it together, then I think it's going to help the Democrats immeasurably if they address both the social and the economic dimensions of racism and sexism and other forms of inequality.
And you point out in your article, Dems want to ditch leaders and move left. You point out in that article that it is the African-American community. It is women. It is people of color. This is the working class.
Of course it is. That's the other, you know, the Democrats are in a heated debate now. How do we reach the white working class? Well, you can leave off white. You know, you can just say, how do we reach the working class? How do we reach working people? Because the message that's going to resonate, including values messages of community and family, all those things are going to resonate across identity lines if you do it right.
Well, Richard, thank you so much for spending all this time with us. When can people see your TV show?
Well, if you've got DirecTV, you can see it Monday nights at 9:30. Otherwise, you can see us online at youtube.com/TheZeroHour, or you can get our podcast on iTunes.
And Richard, you're an expert on Social Security, so sometime we'll want to get you back and talk about the future of Social Security and Medicare.
Anytime.
All right, Richard Eskow, thanks a lot.
You bet, my pleasure.
All right, great to talk to you. That's Richard Eskow. He's a senior advisor for health and economic justice for Social Security Works. He's the host of The Zero Hour on Free Speech TV. He writes a lot for several publications, including you can see him on The Huffington Post, and you can see him at ourfuture.org. And we're going to post a link to some of his writings on our website when we post a link to this interview later on today at WMNF.org. And as you know, this show is podcast too, so you can subscribe to the podcast for Radioactivity and get to listen to it every day. Every day I try to bring on an interesting guest or two or three or four, and then open up the phones for conversation most of the time. So we're going to open up the phones in just a moment. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. And you are listening to WMNF in Tampa. And Simon writes this. He says, if the Democratic Party needs to move to the left, has that not occurred with Tom Perez and Keith Ellison leading the DNC? Why are the DNC donations behind the Republican Party donations? Please don't tell me it's the messaging of the DNC. I'm not sure what Richard would say to that. I would say that Tom Perez is more centrist than Keith Ellison. I think the donations that are coming in, and I haven't looked at this, so I'm just guessing, but I think the donations that we're seeing coming into both parties right now are largely not small donations from individuals, grassroots activists. The donations coming in at this point in the process are the big funders. The corporate donations are coming in now. Once we get into the campaign season that begins next year, you're going to find a lot of small donations because people get revved up about an individual candidate. Unfortunately, Richard's not here to answer that question. 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. I do want to just mention Russia a little bit because I think the hearings yesterday were very interesting. There were hearings on Capitol Hill about the 3,000 Facebook ads bought by Russian operatives to try to shape the American political conversation during last year's election. I thought some of the ads were very interesting that were tied to the Russians. There was a Facebook page called Being Patriotic, bought by an ad touting Miners for Trump, and talking about a rally in Pennsylvania, one of several key swing states. And the ad said, Mr. Trump pursues the goal of creating more jobs and supports the working class, says the ad, which features images of miners and Trump in a miners' protection hard hat. He said he would put miners back to work. And from another Russian-controlled ad called The Heart of Texas, they announced a rally for May 21st, 2016, under the banner of Stop the Islamization of Texas. So it became pretty clear as they were doing the hearings yesterday at the Senate Intelligence Committee that the Russians were looking to stir up political divides in this country and coming up with, I think, some clever clever ads. We're going to hear a little bit of a conversation that took place during that. I just want to say that from my conservative friends over the past week, they've sent me an email saying that George Soros has spent $18 billion preparing to fund a riot on November 4th. Now, maybe you've seen that from your friends on the conservative side. I've got this ad, or it's not really an ad. It's an email with some links to it. And I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens November 4th, whether there's rioting anywhere on the planet funded by $18 billion, funded by George Soros, who is one of the favorite targets of people on the far right who think that liberal billionaire is the source of all evil, they think. Anyway, so one of the other things discovered at the Senate Intelligence Committee yesterday was that there was an ad that said, like, if you want Jesus to win. And the ad uses the terminology of Facebook as it tries to get users to publicly declare their interest in groups, events, and products. So if you want Jesus to win, you like this ad. It showed Clinton dressed as Satan. It's the group that sponsored the ad was the Army of Jesus, and it showed Clinton dressed as Satan with red horns and boxing gloves appearing to punch Jesus, who also was wearing boxing gloves, as well as a determined glare as heavenly light appeared above him. And so the ad said, like if you want Jesus to win, and then took you to a conservative site. Lots of interesting, clever ads. And yesterday at the Senate Intelligence Committee hearing, there was this interchange between Minnesota Senator Al Franken and one of the executives of Facebook. This is Senator Franken trying to get to an understanding about why Facebook would accept rubles to pay for political ads. And here's Senator Franken asking the question.
In some case, paying for it in rubles. So I want to understand why no one seems to have caught on to the Russian effort earlier. Mr. Stretch, how did Facebook, which prides itself on being able to process billions of data points and instantly transform them into personal connections for its user, somehow not make the connection that electoral ads paid for in rubles were coming from Russia? Those are two data points. American political ads and Russian money, rubles. How could you not connect those two dots?
Senator, you mentioned one aspect of the Russian threat that was so visible in 2016, which was the question of account compromise, stealing contents, and disseminating them, and that's a threat our security team was intensely focused on, and we think effectively addressed. I think in hindsight, we should have had a broader lens. There were signals we missed, and we are now focused.
People are buying ads on your platform with rubles. They're political ads. You put billions of data points together all the time. That's what I hear that these platforms do. They're the most sophisticated things invented by man ever. Google has all knowledge that man has ever developed. You can't put together rubles with a political ad and go like, those two data points spell out something bad.
Senator, it's a signal we should have been alert to, and in hindsight, it's one we missed.
Okay, yeah. Will Facebook commit not to accepting political ads paid for with foreign money in the future, say with rubles or the North Korean won? If a political ad with a won is paid for by a won, a North Korean won, will you pledge not to put it on?
Senator, our goal is to require all political advertisers, regardless of currency, to provide documentation information demonstrating that they're authorized to advertise. The currency signal, I understand your point. It's a signal we should have missed.
You can't say no to that.
The currency signal...
You can't say no to that.
It's very easy to...
Please answer yes or no, sir. I'm asking you a question. Just answer yes or no. Can you do that? You're sophisticated. You're the chief legal counsel for Facebook. Please answer yes or no.
I can tell you that we're not going to permit advertising to... permit political advertising by foreign actors. The reason I'm hesitating on foreign currency is that it's relatively easy for bad actors to switch currency. So it's a signal, but it's not enough. We have to sweep more broadly.
Why would anyone use the North Korean won? Why would a bad actor go like, I'm going to trick Facebook. I'm going to use the North Korean won.
Senator, our goal is to make sure we're addressing all forms of abuse.
My goal is for you to think through this stuff a little bit better.
Well, there's obviously frustrated Senator Al Franken asking a Facebook executive named Colin Stretch why they didn't think something was up when rubles were pouring in to fund these political ads during last year's campaign on Facebook. So let's open up the phone lines and see where this conversation is going to go. Our phone number, 813-239-9663, and our email address, dj@wmnf.org. James Lyles is our phone producer today, and we're going to go to David in Pasco County. Hi, David. What would you like to comment about?
Good morning, Rob, and thank you for your show.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you for listening.
In September of 1976, I turned 18 years old, and my father took me to the Pinellas County Courthouse in Clearwater to register to vote, and he encouraged me to vote or to register as a Democrat, and I did register as a Democrat and voted for Jimmy Carter. In the following years, I saw several members of my family switch to the Republican Party to vote for Ronald Reagan. I could not consciously support Hillary Clinton in this past election, and I did vote for Donald Trump, and I'm very sorry that I did now, seeing that what's going on, and I truly see no leadership in either party.
Well, I don't really want to spend a lot of time relitigating the last year's election, but what would a candidate have had to say to you to get you to vote for them if it wasn't Donald Trump? What did Donald Trump say to you that you really liked?
Well, the same thing that Barack Obama said about all the change and all the wall and, you know, protecting the American and bringing back the American people. And it just seems like he's procrastinating on any type of action in his administration. It's just nothing's happening except scandal.
Do you think the president overpromised?
I think they all do.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I say, God bless America. I love this country, and I've worked hard all my life. I'm a little bit retired now, but I like to work a little bit and find something to do. But I feel bad for these kids that are getting born today, what they're being born into. I mean, this is just, when you look at the Hollywood sex scandals, I mean, Dustin Hoffman, my God, who would ever imagine? But so many things are coming out of the woodwork now, and people... Human beings are not the best creatures on the earth. I think it's just a human problem. People are just not good.
Yeah, you know, it is shocking to see all these Hollywood stars and some politicians involved in these sex scandals. Dave, I would suggest that it was probably even much worse years ago. Before we had all the media we have and the sense of empowerment that women have.
Very good point, because now that they were in a society that everything is like publicized within seconds of happening, I think a lot more went on that we probably never knew about.
Yeah, I think terrible things went on.
And I think at 60 years old, I think my solution every day is just to go to the beach.
Okay, David, thanks a lot. Thanks for your phone call.
Rob.
All right, good to hear from you. 813-239-9663. Tony writes this, great suggestions by Richard Eskow for updating the Democratic Party. However, as a lifetime 76-year-old Democrat, the party needs to keep in mind that us folks over 55, we vote much more than younger ones do. The Democrats need to remind old folks, most of whom are at least partly dependent on them, that Republicans threatened their Social Security and Medicare that the Democrats put into effect when we were young. That's Tony's email. Tony, thank you for your email. You can send your email in to us at dj@wmnf.org. And thanks a lot for listening to WMNF 88.5 FM. Let's go to Jim and Ruskin. Hey, Jim, you're on. What aspect of the show would you like to comment on?
Yeah, hi, Rob.
Hi.
Well, the alienation of people toward the Democratic Party. You know, you don't subscribe to this notion, but I have for years and years, that both parties are opposite sides to the same coin, and they serve the same interest, and that interest isn't us. You know, that interest is themselves, or you know, the party line, or billionaires, or whatever. And the American people are getting hip to this, and the American people were looking at, well, just look at the candidates. I mean, yeah, your old standby, everybody saw it coming, Hillary Clinton. But Donald Trump, who the hell, you know, when I first heard that he was going to run, I was laughing. I said, oh, yeah, right. And he was going to be vice president, Honey Boo Boo, or, you know, And the thing is, we were searching, and I consider myself average in every way, an average American, okay? And we were searching for some form of leadership for quite a few years, and the Democrats did not provide it. The Republicans, you know, the Republicans, of course, didn't provide it. And I had voted Republican. The first president I ever voted for was Nixon, and if you ignore a few things, he was a pretty good president.
Yeah, if you ignore some things, yeah.
Yeah. No, but really, some of the environmental legislation that we
Some of the domestic legislation was pretty good. I think
yeah.
Some of the foreign policy was pretty horrible.
Right, yeah. I agree. Like I said, you know, there are a few warts on them. But anyway, what struck me for years is that neither party, and I was in the newspaper business, okay, and I talked to this old...
You're a newspaper guy and you're a conservative, Jim?
I'm not a conservative. I'm an independent.
Okay, but you weren't
somebody,
a raging liberal. You weren't voting for George McGovern when you ran against Nixon.
No, not really.
Yeah, so here's an example of a conservative. I'd say you're conservative if you vote for Nixon.
Well, I was, you know, I was just voting age. I just hit voting age.
Yeah.
And my whole family was blue collar and Democrat, solidly Democrat.
Did they beat you up for it?
Huh?
Did they beat you up for voting for a Republican?
No. Of course, I didn't tell them. You know, my grandfather and my father were what you call resurrection men in local politics, you know, where they would bring out the dead vote. You know, they'd go to the cemetery, and because my grandpa couldn't write, he'd bring my father with him, and they figured that just because someone's dead doesn't mean they're not a good Democrat. So, that whole political thing, it's a charade, and no matter what party, they serve that.
Yeah, 1%. But Jim, these folks are passing laws. They're deciding the future of Social Security. They're deciding where the roads go. They decide which wars we get into.
I declared myself independent back when George W. Wanted to go into the Middle East.
Yeah. You know, all right.
He declared war on Iraq.
Jim, thanks a lot. Thanks for your phone
all
call.
Right,
great to hear from you. And let's go to Jeremy in Tampa. Hi, Jeremy. What would you like to say about the last hour?
I don't know.
Okay, you don't know. You're calling in, though.
I'm looking at this, Rob, and I just, you know, instead of discussing afterwards that it was once again another choice between two horrific choices with two horrific parties.
Well, we're not.
What the hell are we going to do about this? We're talking about people in Russia running Facebook ads. Like, that's how good these guys control the narrative.
Yeah, you know, you might have missed the earlier part of the show. Earlier, we were talking about this autopsy on the Democratic Party and how the party could become more appealing to a broader group of people in the country. So, yeah, I did play the Al Franken soundbite because he was so charged up. But we have a much bigger topic on the table, too, and that is if the Democratic Party moves left, will more people vote for it or will fewer people vote for it?
I can't believe that anybody would vote for it, period, at this point, to be honest with you.
All right.
It's absolutely amazing to me with that track record. They would be in any other sector of the world, of people's lives, they would have been fired a long time ago.
All right. Well, Jeremy, if you get a chance,
back for more. It's
yeah,
crazy.
Jeremy, if you get a chance, go back and listen to the beginning of the show because I think you missed a really interesting interview. Jeremy, thanks a lot. Great to hear from you. And let's go to Forrest in Land O'Lakes. Hey, Forrest, you're on. What would you like to say? Hi, Forrest. You're
on. Rob.
Good morning.
Good morning, Rob. First of all, I'd like to say that I've called in before as a donator to Pledge during Pledge time, but I've never called in to give any commentary on any of your shows. Tomorrow I turn 36 years old. And
well, happy birthday.
Well, thank you. The radio, so I'm not quite as old as the radio station, but WMNF has been a part of my life for as long as I can remember, thanks to my hippie parents.
That's great. That's great. give our best to your parents.
Will do. I just wanted to give my take on the topic you discussed last regarding the testimony that was given to the House from Facebook, Twitter, and Google yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I find it absolutely appalling that this is the way to win an election in today's society, I suppose. You know, you take advantage of our society and their weakness to discern true factual news from fake news and exploit that to win an election. And I really feel that that's what this really boils down to, whether or not it is okay or ethical to do such a thing. You know, that might be a separate topic, but if I could, please, I'd like to just read a little text that I sent to my family yesterday when I was watching this, this coverage on C-SPAN yesterday. What I wrote to them was, if you're able to tune to C-SPAN 3 right now, Facebook, Twitter, and Google giving testimony to House of Reps regarding the 100% clearly acknowledged by all parties as having occurred Russian false news campaign designed to promote the Trump win. I remember footage being shown on election day of the Russian House of Parliament, or whatever the term may be, all celebrating in uproarious applause upon the news of the Trump win. It's obvious what happened. Trump and company paid Putin and company to help Trump's campaign because of mutual interest by producing 100% false, fake, bogus, unauthentic, which is a term I heard cleverly used during the hearing, bull stuff news. I guess this is how you win an election in today's world. Just brainwash the idiots that make up 75% of our down-the-drain, hell-in-a-handbasket society. They don't understand that social media, which is so malleable and so easily changed by anyone, is not credible news. This simple concept is the true injustice. Not shocking that this happened, but absolutely appalling. This is the lesson to be learned. Don't believe anything you see on effing Facebook.
All right. Well,
that's my take on it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Forrest. Thanks a lot. Thanks for your support, too.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Great to have you as part of the MNF family, Forrest. Thank you. 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. You know, some stuff we get on Facebook is sourced. You know where it's coming from. Sometimes it has footnotes. Sometimes it has links to studies and reports and actual video. And I think that stuff can be trusted. It's the stuff like I got the other day that said that George Soros is planning to, with $18 billion, that's billion with a B, try to start a riot somewhere in the world on November 4th. And one of our conservative listeners, somebody that emails us every day, sent this out and thought it was true. Well, we'll see. November 4th is, what, this Saturday? $18 billion can go a long way. You can fly a lot of people around the world with $18 billion. Where this riot supposedly is going to take place, who knows? I doubt that there's any truth to it at all. And that's something that showed up. It's on Facebook, and I got it via email. So we'll see. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Sheila in Pasco County. Hi, Sheila. You're on WMNF.
Hi. I am not a real into politics. I had never been up until this past year. I'm originally from Tennessee. I guess you can say I'm conservative. But I just feel like I don't care what color you are. I don't care if you're black, if you're white, if you're Muslim, if you're Indian, if you're peaceful. I just don't understand why people are trying to take God out of our country. I was born and raised going to church, believing in God, and it's like nobody, I have the 7 grandkids, 2 great grandkids. People can't talk about God. I feel like my own family is even being divided because they just say, you know, you have to go with the liberals, the liberals. I don't believe in abortion. I don't believe in abortion at 8 months pregnant. I believe that's murder. And I'm being persecuted all the time for being a Christian. And I'm like, I don't get it. I just don't understand.
And Sheila, you're being persecuted. Persecuted is a pretty strong word. What's happening to you?
Well, I just mean I have people in my family who don't even want to talk to me. Who don't, and we were all raised, we were born in Tennessee, and I'm like, if you don't want to believe in God, that's fine. You don't have to believe in God.
Well, Sheila, I think I think you're entitled to your own personal beliefs. I think that's certainly, you know, part of what America's about. You know, I'm sorry you're having trouble with your family over it, but everybody has a different idea of what God is, how to reach it. Everybody has a different interpretation of the Bible. There's not one person. There's probably no two people on the planet who could agree exactly what the Bible says. Everybody disagrees. There's no two people that agree what the Quran says or what the Jewish text says. Well, so, but, I'm sorry you're getting persecuted by your family, but are people outside your family persecuting you?
Oh, I don't even hardly go on Facebook anymore because I have been attacked by kids in college saying that I'm a privileged white American. I'm like, I'm not privileged white American. I've worked my whole life, and I'm still working. I should be retired. My husband's had a heart transplant. We get no benefits from the VA. I'm fighting with them, and I'm like, you know, people want to take In God We Trust off our money. They don't want to say In God.
But how would that make your husband or your situations better how would it make it your husband's situation worse or your situation worse if they took In God We Trust off the money? I don't think that movement's going anywhere. But if it happened, how would it materially affect you?
I have very strong faith that God.
Well, not every Christian, though, thinks that it's important to have God's name on money. Some Christians would point out that Jesus threw the money changers out of the temple, that Jesus didn't want to have anything to do with money. So, there's that whole group of Christians that say you shouldn't associate religion and money, and they're Christians. So,
okay,
nobody has a monopoly on what Christians think about money.
But what is the deal with kneeling and protesting at the football games? I don't get that.
Yeah, I know, and I think a lot of people that are angry about it don't get it. I think the people that understand why football players are upset at police brutality and use the knee as a way to peacefully protest police brutality, I think they all understand. But I know you don't understand. But I think there's a big gap. Yeah, let me just quickly ask you, Sheila, do you think there's police brutality in the U.S.?
Well, my son-in-law is a sheriff and a hostage negotiator.
Do you think there's police brutality?
I think there may be in some cases, but I think in large, no, because I think that
And that's what they're protesting. They're not protesting every police officer. They're protesting just those police officers and sheriff's deputies that do that.
Yeah, there's good and bad in everything. I grew up in Memphis. Memphis is a city with a lot of gangs. I don't care if you're a black gang, a white supremacist gang, a Muslim gang. I don't care what. I just want peace.
Sheila, we all want peace. Hey, Sheila, thanks a lot. I hope your husband gets better, and I hope you get the VA benefits that he deserves if he was in the military. And let's go to Mary in Safety Harbor. Hi, Mary. We just have about a minute. What would you like to say?
All right, I'll be brief. I've been listening to everybody, and I think there's, if I can sum up two of the basic problems I'm hearing, it's an inability to think critically and to look at things in a way that doesn't achieve a false equivalency. Certainly the Democrats and the Republicans all have problems, but they're not the same. The world we live in today would be significantly different if Hillary Clinton had been elected. I'm a woman. I fought for women's rights my whole life. Patriarchy is resurging, and lots of the things we fought for have been thrown down the drain. But this isn't because people are terrible. It's because we have had a system of sexism and racism that is continuing to emerge. And how to throw our hands up in the arm and say nothing is good, it's all terrible, is a nihilistic and disastrous approach. The Republicans and the Democrats have different worldviews. The Democratic worldview would present a very different world, and one that, what I believe, would present us, would allow us to have more equality
and justice. Mary, thanks a lot. I'm sorry to say we're out of time. If you want to comment about today's show, call us up and record a comment on our comment line, 813-238-8001, extension 115. Mitch Perry is coming up next on Midpoint. Stay tuned. This is WMNF 10.